I think I'm going to have to concede defeat and admit publicly, I might as well, that my silly notion of free energy circuits manufacturing a ton of energy from within themselves, if we give them a scarcity of energy from their environment, enough to starve them, but at least something to stimulate them, and then the right arrangement of various reactances, that they somehow manufacture the difference and make up and produce a huge amount of energy inside themselves. I'm going to have to give that up because it can't be proven. What is more likely is that the universe is providing the energy. See, I've done several experiments to lend credibility to the notion that a free energy circuit, if you put it anywhere near a transmission line, let's say, that has energy inside of it, it'll suck energy from that transmission line so fast that because it's available and because free energy circuits have two tendencies, as far as the simulator is concerned, the pure idealistic isolated environment of a simulation, you can make it look like the circuit is all by itself in isolation, which is the way physics likes to look at things. In fact, that's the way they define perpetual motion machines. They violate conservation of energy because they are in isolation and you're not giving it any energy to speak of, and somehow the energy comes out of it anyway, regardless. Well, that's a fiction. That's an idealized fiction that does not exist in nature at all. Nothing exists in isolation, and I'm going to explain it to you how that is. So you can't do a controlled scientific experiment in which you have a control group and an experimental group to verify this silly notion that physics has programmed all of us, including me, and the simulators that are designed for us to believe that a circuit can exist in isolation, electrical or magnetic isolation, or both. It's impossible. It does not happen at all, ever. It never happens, it never will, it never has. Circuits are always in communication with sources of energy surrounding them, and they steal. Basically, a free energy circuit steals energy from other circuits, from other matter, from all matter existing in creation. And it does this because all matter is charged. It has energy. It has, voltage charge. It has current. You know, it has both, all the components of Ohm's law. And we have empty space serving as a dielectrical medium to store these charges in between, in this empty space in between matter as well as the empty space within matter. So all of space, whether it's empty or full of matter, is a dielectric medium that is charged with energy from the materials, the material matter that is inside of space. Space encompasses, you know, all of matter. You can't have matter without space, so you can't have energy without space. And space serves as the dielectric medium, similar to the dielectric within a capacitor, and all of matter serves as the plates, the conductive plates, because conductive plates are what gets charge. They receive the charge from the circuit, and then they pass that charge to the dielectric medium that stores it. The plates don't store it. They're incapable of storage of voltage. Everybody knows that. You know, a conductor, such as a coil of wire, cannot store voltage. It's impossible. So it's the dielectric medium of empty space that stores the charge. But you've got to have plates, something that conducts electricity, to convey energy to the dielectric medium for it to charge, for it to store any charge, and also to orient polarization of charge so that you can have an orientation, just like a magnet is not a magnet unless all of the little crystalline dipoles inside a magnet are oriented in the same direction. Otherwise, they all cancel each other out. But the magnetism is already there in a piece of iron. They just have to get oriented in the same direction. And that's what the plates do in a capacitor. They orient the voltage charge so that you can get a polarization and a net charge. Otherwise, it would all cancel out. But you also need to convey to the dielectric medium the charge that's going to be stored there. And so since matter, you know, normal matter, you know, no, I'm not talking about subatomic, just normal, you know, atoms of copper, silicon, you know, all the matter that we think of, atoms, you know, whole atoms, they all have electron orbitals, which are conductive. They are conducting electricity within themselves, zipping around in orbit around the nucleus of the atom. And so every single atom is surrounded by a conductive plate that has current, and that current is conveying its potential to the empty space that is both inside of the electron as well as outside of the electron, outside the space of the atom, for that matter, or inside. It's all this space is all getting charged. And this is why it is said in the Vedic tradition, or even in the Western mystical tradition, esoteric tradition, metaphysical tradition, that akasha, which translates from the Sanskrit to mean space, akasha remembers everything. You're just what, like we study water, the memory of water, how water retains the memory of all of the compounds that had been dissolved in it, and it's only for that reason that homeopathy works. Likewise, space remembers the activity, the impression made upon it by the activity of all of the material atoms that have existed in it. So if you want to know what happened about whatever, where do you go? You go to empty space to find the memory of what had happened in creation, anywhere in creation. Because space is a singularity. Matter is a plurality. But space is a singularity. There's no division to space. It's not like this space over here is separate from that space over there because it's one and the same space. It's only matter that's plural. But space is united as a singularity. And that's what makes communication between all parts of space simultaneous. And it doesn't take any time because you don't have to send energy to transmit information. You simply go to space to recall where you're at, your location, to recall what happens somewhere else, because all of space records what happens everywhere simultaneously in a singularity of location, namely space. So when we assign locations to space, we assign those locations because there is a piece of matter sitting there marking that spot. Without the matter, there'd be no spot. There would be no location. We can draw on a paper the concept of location, but it's meaningless in reality unless there is something material, such as matter or energy, to locate that location in space. Otherwise, it won't be located. You know, it's like holding a parking space. unless you put a person there to stand there, you know, your passenger to hold the space for you while you do whatever it is you have to do before you park there, somebody else is going to take that space, right? So it's like that when it comes right down to it. And so this is how the cosmic capacitor works. It remembers all energy interactions, and it stores that. Whatever's current at the moment, it stores it, as well as the memory from before. It stores the energy currently of what is stored there from all the activity of all of matter in all of creation. So this means that it's impossible to have a circuit in isolation. It does not exist in reality. It only exists within the mind of man. And he programs that into his simulator software. And because that's the definition of conservation of energy is this idea of isolation. Okay? The idea that we can isolate a circuit. That's the only way conservation of energy or conservation of charge, because conservation of energy is actually conservation of current. We call it energy, but in reality it's current, not energy. That's the way the formulation of the conservation of energy actually works. So we've already lied by using the wrong word. We've used a generic word when we should have used the word that is specific to its definition. Why not use the same word? But we didn't. We replaced it. We replaced conservation of current with conservation of energy and then apply it to energy as if it applies, which it does not. It's conservation of current. And then we have conservation of charge, and those are two separate conservations. They do not mix. They do not overlap. They don't even share. The only thing they share in common is the word conservation, and that's it. Yet they are two different distinct conservations, two different distinct items of interest that are conserved. One is charge, you know, voltage, and the other is current. And that's the way Kirchhoff law works. But we like to mix things up, you know. We like to be dominating and domineering, and so why don't we use conservation of current to include conservation of charge as well as current and call it conservation of energy, which is bogus. It's a lie. Anyway, that's a little sidebar, but we have to cover that because there's a lot of lying going on, and we lie to ourselves. This idea of isolation is a lie. It's impossible. You cannot isolate a circuit from another circuit. It's impossible. They communicate no matter what you try to do to isolate them. They will communicate if they are designed properly and operated properly. Now, we don't do that. We suppress the communication between circuits by assuming there's no such thing as a free lunch, assuming that a circuit cannot produce energy from within itself, which is true, but that's not the way the universe works. The universe works because matter can steal energy from other matter if it is starved for energy and if it's properly designed to do so. And that's what a free energy circuit is. It's it's operated under the premise that of starvation, and it's designed to act as a suction pump. You arrange the reactances in such a way that the circuit builds up a suction within itself, a pulling force within itself. You know, you give it a little energy, and that's all you need to give it to create this humongous pulling force that literally sucks energy from other circuits in its environment. And I've seen the difference between what the simulator assumes to be an isolated circuit that's a free energy circuit versus another circuit nearby that has energy. And I create a coupling between two inductances between that are within each of those two circuits. And the free energy circuit sucks energy from the full, fully charged, energized circuit so fast it's unbelievable. I can make the coupling, the magnetic coupling, so small. I can have it 20 place values to the right of the decimal point of percentage of one, of unity, of coupling factor. And it still doesn't matter. You have to have it there. But it doesn't matter how small you make the coupling coefficient. It will suck energy from that other fully charged circuit so fast, there's no way that the fully charged circuit can hold on to all of its energy in a very greedy fashion and keep it all to itself. It's impossible. It will share it, whether it likes it or not, with other circuits that are starving. And this is how creation feeds itself, material creation, literally by stealing energy from other sources that have more energy. It's shared with items of interest, which is just about all items, all material existence. So there's no way an atom can be starved for energy. Its electrons will always be fed and whip around perpetually, as if they were a perpetual machine, but such a thing does not exist because there is no such thing as anything existing in isolation. It's an impossible feat of human imagination. It does not exist. So every atom has all the energy it needs to function because it steals it from all the other atoms in creation. And when you have a humongous amount of material in creation and you want to steal from it, you're a lonely little copper atom. Guess what? If you take a tiny little fraction from all of the atoms in existence, they're not going to notice the loss. It's impossible, because there are too many atoms of everything for a single little copper atom to steal and for all the other atoms in existence to notice. They're not going to notice the loss. Trust me. It'll be so small because it's stolen from everything. All the atoms in creation contribute to the welfare of that lonely little copper atom that has nothing to live on, and its poor little electrons are starving for energy. There's no way they're going to starve. They're going to always have enough energy. Whatever they need, they're going to have it. And then some. They can have more if they want to. If you arrange a circuit in a certain fashion, it can be a glutton for greedily stealing energy in excess of its needs and blow up. And blow up from the excess. This is probably why stars blow up, become novas or supernovas, because they, for some reason, get greedy in their electrical reactant and magnetic reactant configuration. Now I'm realizing, I learned recently, there's something called magnetic reactants, which is not the same as electrical reactants. They're two different types of reactances. So if I want to be generic and pervasive and just talk about reactants in general, I better just say the word reactants and leave it all by itself. Don't try to clarify, because it'll actually make it too specific to a type of reactants if I try to clarify, unless I need to clarify. So electrical reactants is separate and different and unique from magnetic reactants. There's actually an article on Wikipedia on magnetic reactants, and it's defined in terms of magnetism, while electrical reactants is defined in terms of charge, potential, you know, electrostatics, while magnetic reactants is defined in terms of current and magnetism kind of stuff. So there are two completely different, another little sidebar here, but I have to cover it because it was a little eye-popper when I ran across that little article that's, as far as I know, is never given any credence, never given any promotion or advertising in our diction, in our common sense diction about electrical engineering. It's, we've forgotten it. We've ignored it. Anyway, so this notion of electrical or magnetic isolation is preposterous, because I can magnetically couple two circuits with such a tiny magnetic coupling and make one full of energy and one deficient but energized in energy. And if the full circuit is just a conventional circuit, you know, that's got a voltage source and it's got a humongous amount of energy in it, and it's not a free energy circuit. But then I have this other circuit that's starving for energy, that has a little, it's given a little bit of energy, but not enough to run on. And it's configured to be a free energy circuit. Guess what? It sucks energy from the robust circuit so fast, it's unbelievable. So it's only within the mind of man that we create this fiction of isolation to a circuit. And taking that position of presumption of isolation, we reinforce it and make it real. In other words, it's logic after the fact, or before the fact. Well, it's self-fulfilling logic, because we then go and calculate, okay, well, how much does the load need to run properly? And then we have to add a little extra to cover our losses. And so we give the circuit so much energy at such a cost that it cannot pray to steal energy from anyone else, because it can't. And that's the way free energy, that's the way we suppress the existence of free energy within a circuit. One of the factors of suppression is to give the circuit all the energy it needs, and then it won't manifest free energy. It's impossible, because overreactance has been suppressed. But if we configure the circuit properly, and if we starve it and give it a little energy but not enough to live on, it'll suck energy from other circuits like crazy. because no circuit lives in isolation to another circuit. So when we have the, and I'll give you an example. There is a real life example of this. There is a scientific paper on the internet that I link to from my wiki book that I call Free Energy Does Not Exist in Wikiversity, and it's a draft. Unfortunately, it's not a book anymore. It's lost its status as a book, but I have a link in there that I bumped into of a scientific paper that's on ResearchGate. You might be able to look it up. I can't remember the title of this paper, but it was concerning the electric utility grid of the northern sector of some northern sector of India. You know, the country India over there next door to China and Mongolia. When they have a depreciation of electrical generation, when they don't have enough, when it drops in northern India, they actually get a phenomenon of over-unity. And they say that in their paper. They get over-unity in the northern section of the electric utility grid of northern India when the electric utility grid in that area has like a brownout, let's say. You know, it's not a total downage. It's just a brownout. It's a reduction of the generation of electricity. They actually get over-unity. From within the grid, it manifests. Doesn't mean it comes from within the grid, see? But it does collect there. That's the way it works. Free energy circuits act as a receiver station, you know, like a radio. Radio reception in which they receive power from their environment, because the grid is connected to the environment, to the Earth. And the Earth is receiving electricity from various sources, such as the Sun and Jupiter, you know, are the two major contributors, because they're the big ones nearby. And so the Earth gets plenty of electricity, and it's transferred to the grid when it's properly configured to do so, and it usually is, but is also starving. It's stimulated, but doesn't have enough energy to function on. It will produce over-unity because it's connected to the environment and it steals it from the environment. So when, you know, just like I say that free energy is a fiction no different than the fiction of electrical reactance and magnetic reactance in general, because both are predicated on the fiction of the square root of negative one. Likewise, when C. Earl Amon was arrested when he entered Washington, D.C. in 1921 with his free energy-powered EV, battery-less EV, when he was charged with stealing energy from the grid of Denver, Colorado, when he and his brother performed their demonstration of their free energy device-powered EV, they're no more guilty than is the electric utility grid is guilty of stealing energy, just not from the same parties. The electric utility grid is stealing energy from its environment, while C. Earl Amon was stealing it from the grid. And because the grid is a private party, it's considered theft in the legal sense of the term, while because the grid is stealing from the environment and the environment is not considered private property, it's considered publicly accessible to everyone, then if you steal from the grid, you're considered a thief. But if the grid steals from the environment, it's considered charity. Go figure. It's considered entitlement to the charitable donation that the environment makes upon the grid. Anyway, however way you shake it, it's kind of like, you know, the Europeans, conquistadors or whatever, you know, come to America and they plant their flag and they say, in the name of Spain, or whatever country it happens to be that these emissaries are coming from, in the name of Spain, we claim this land for Spain, and it becomes Spanish territory. Well, you know, before that, it was nobody's territory because the Native Americans knew better. They didn't own anything because they knew it's a preposterous idea. Only within the mind of Western civilization did we create this notion of isolation and of ownership of property. That this circuit belongs to me, and it's isolated, and I'm going to run it that way on that premise so that it will not steal. Well, but guess what? We do steal, don't we? We no longer manufacture our own wealth. We have to steal it from other countries, or We sell our debt to other countries, which means we steal their property in exchange for our debt. We give them debt and they give us property and we survive. Because we our country, the United States of America, is literally a free energy circuit that steals from its environment. Because we are so poor, we can't even create our own wealth anymore. We have to create credit in the form of debt and borrow from other countries and pay for the interest rate on that principle of debt by doing business with foreign countries such as China, manufacturing our goods and services, or the Philippines, manufacturing our services, or India. And we don't pay the principal, we simply pay the interest on that debt. So we literally, this country is literally functioning as a free energy circuit, starved for energy, but still we have a little energy of our own. And we literally pull the difference from foreign countries to survive. That's literally how we function. So don't tell me free energy does not exist. Because that is how our country's economy exists and survives. For as long as it is, it's limited duration because we only have so many countries we can borrow from to survive on. We don't have cultures from foreign planets to borrow economic energy from. So this little charade is only going to go on for so long. It's been going on for 50 years when Nixon opened up the market channels to China, when he went to China in the early 70s. And it was a boon to our economy. So we've had 50 years of woohoo, but it's going to end. And probably very soon, because it can't go on forever. Because China is not limitless in its funding, in its resource of, it's a phrase and we turn it into an acronym. Well, I forget what it's called. Is it the GPI or the NPI, the National Profit Index? I forget what it's called, but it's an index that shows how much wealth that country is creating. And ours is negative because we don't create it. All we create is debt. The net national average is in the negative. Sure, we do some creation of wealth from within ourselves, and that gives us something to run on for real power. But we have to make up the difference, and so we borrow it, giving debt to foreign countries to do so. Anyway, so nothing is in isolation, and at some point we're going to have to switch to free energy circuits, because the way our economy is set up, it does not recognize, unless you have an accountability between yourself and another country, you don't have an exchange going on. But guess what? With free energy circuits, you have Mother Nature as the global or cosmic, I should say, accountant, keeping track of everybody's karma while we all interact with each other. Because nobody is in isolation with anyone. Unless you're so robust to generate your own wealth of energy such that you don't need anybody else's, then you're doing fine. And you're going to be sharing your energy with everybody else in creation. Trust me, to one degree or another, you will be. To one extent or another, you will be. So that's the point and purpose of this little recording, is to say that isolation is impossible unless you are so replete, so overflowing with energy that you can't possibly be interested in anybody else's energy or anybody else's economy, for that matter, because it amounts to the same thing. Economics and electrical energy is really one and the same thing. It's like two different manifestations of the same thing, but it amounts to the same thing. But if you're robust with energy, full of it, you're not going to be interested, and you're not going to be able to suck energy from anybody else. But boy, are people going to be sucking energy from you every which way possible that you could possibly imagine, and in many other ways that you can't even imagine. Because you are not in isolation. Nobody is. That's a fiction. So conservation of energy is a fiction. Conservation of current is a fiction, conservation of charge is a fiction, because nothing exists in isolation except within the imagination of mankind. That's the only place where conservation exists, within our imagination, because it does not exist in reality. So when people say that, oh, free energy does not exist, well, conservation does not exist either. It's a fiction. As if free energy is a fiction, so is conservation. But if anything, free energy is not a fiction, because nothing exists in isolation, but it's conservation that is a fiction, because conservation only exists within our imagination, because it only within our imagination can anything be isolated, such that, oh, well, it's not getting any energy from its environment, so we better supply it from a battery pack, you know, and carry the battery pack around in the base or the trunk of our electric vehicle to supply energy. No, you made a certain type of electrical device operating on the principle of robustness, in which you provide all the energy it needs. And you're wealthy enough to afford to do that. But the rest of us poor people have to get our energy elsewhere, so we buy gasoline and stick it in our tank from the pump, because we can't carry electricity around. In fact, most battery packs in electric vehicles cannot store enough charge. In fact, they can't even have enough solar panels on their roof to be independent of the grid. So they're designed the same way our gasoline-powered cars are, dependent on some outside source for energy. So this is the way we think. This is the way we just assume that we all have to be wealthy in order to survive. And that's ridiculous. This idea that we have to be wealthy, so wealthy that we can afford to throw away energy by using it only once and not recycle it, you know, to live a life of luxury in order to survive, that's screwy. Nobody does that in reality, yet that's what we have in our media. You know, we have all these programs about getting rich overnight, you know, winning a lottery or something, or we get to be live the good life, which is the life of survival without having to work. You know, a free energy circuit does not have to work for its energy. It just sucks it for free from other sources surrounding it. So it's living the life of survival without having to live the life of luxury and still have enough energy left over to share with other circuits. Because when you're sucking it at a humongous rate, you're going to get more than you need, which means now you're robust and you did not go to the trouble of supplying it yourself. You stole it instead from other circuits. And yet you have so much that you can now share it with other circuits. You see, this is a completely different way of doing things, and yet still be luxuriating, swimming in a preposterously humongous excess of energy, and have all you need, and more than you need. I mean, this is literally what simulators have taught me. And when I integrate my experience with what our knowledge is, I have to come to the conclusion that a free energy circuit cannot exist in isolation, even though the simulator has been designed to make it look that way. You know, when you have a voltage source in a simulator, such as a battery, we say it has 4 volts, but that's its volts. What's its watts? It literally can have unlimited, infinite current as far as the simulator can go until it crashes the simulator or crashes your computer or both. It has unlimited infinite current, but it only is fixed in its voltage, while a current source is fixed in its current, but has unlimited voltage. So we have this unlimited watts in either case, which is impossible. We know that doesn't exist in a voltage source or a current source. It's always limited watts. But we have the silly notion of unlimited watts within our simulator software, along with our silly notion of circuits existing in isolation from each other, so that we have to have this accountability And we have to supply all the energy the circuit needs, which is a luxury to do that. And then we have this silly notion of conservation because of this silly notion of isolation. And also this silly notion of perpetual motion machines, which don't exist in isolation because they can't. But then why do we set it up that way? Because we do. We set up conservation that way. So naturally, we set up our definition of free energy circuits as if they somehow have to be perpetual motion machines, which is impossible because no circuit in creation is isolated anyway. So we can't even make it isolated to test the preposterousness of perpetual motion. It's impossible. No circuit lives in isolation. It either steals from others or it gets stolen from by others. One way or another, you're either the thief or the victim of theft. But there is no way you can be neither. You are either one or the other when it comes to creation, when it comes to reality. So this is, we have to separate our imagination from reality. They're two separate realities. And I have to do this as an engineer of free energy circuits. I have to do this because physics and physicists and electrical engineers do not. They get the two realities mixed up. Their imagination of electrical reality versus the reality of electrical reality. They just get it all screwed up. Hey, Gewalt. So this is why I have to do these circuits to educate myself and do these posts and blogs and podcasts, because we're really screwed up in our thinking. We get things mixed up. We think, well, it doesn't matter. Let's mix it up anyway. It's not going to matter in the end. Yeah, and then we accuse people of doing things they haven't done that isn't done by everybody else, you know. So when somebody gave me an argument that we all must steal from each other in order to survive, and thus it's okay to steal, and I said, no, it's not fair. It's not right. No. You don't have to steal if you don't. It's not necessary to steal. Yet, if you don't steal, then you get stolen from. And that's what I am. I've been a victim my whole life of getting stolen from. So you see, it's really a question of, are you the thief or are you the victim? That's really all it amounts to. You're either one or the other in any activity that you are pursuing. You are either stealing or being stolen from. And you can't have it a third way. There is no third way of not being a victim and not being a thief. It's not possible. It does not exist. And I came to this conclusion, actually, when my parents were about to undergo divorce, my mother's third from her third husband. I was being blamed by the third husband for the breakdown of their marriage. And it happens all the time, well, almost all the time, in which parents blame the children for their own faults. And the children end up with neuroses as a consequence, or psychoses, as the case may be. And I was going through a hell of a neuroses, and so I went to the beach to try to straighten it all out, and eventually I did. But I couldn't solve it at home, because I was still being accused of their failure, of their failed marriage. So I went to the beach for relief, to get away from that nonsense. And I came to the conclusion that this is the way the reality works. We are either the victim or we are the thief. And everyone is guilty of either being the victim or guilty of being the thief. Because when you think about it, why were you stolen from? Why are you the victim? Because you allowed it to happen. And I knew that. I knew that all along. You know, I wasn't a victim just because I became the victim. I was a victim because I let it happen. I'm going to be the nice guy and turn the other cheek, be so Christian and turn the other cheek and allow myself to be stolen from and become the victim of other people's predatory instincts. Well, that's the reality of the situation. You're either the victim because you allow it to happen, or you're the thief. And a free energy circuit is the thief, and a conventional circuit, according to this imaginary conservation of energy notion, is the victim. That's the way reality works.